Welcome to the DL.
Wednesday morning, Nick, I should have stock in Ricola.
Oh my, you still are you still with sore throat?
Ricola. There you go. If somebody there wants to pay me for that. And the cough. I apologize. I'm drinking, by the way, lukewarm tap water. That's how we're getting through the show today. Powering through. So I apologize in advance for not hitting the cough button enough. We're going to talk about one story today. Well, we might have another story at the end if we have time, but we're going to talk about one story today, and that's Jim Calhoun. Because as I always love to do, I love to talk about the reaction. I like to react to the reaction to the reaction to the reaction to big stories. And there was no bigger story, in my opinion, other than maybe Rutgers scoring 37 points against Louisville last night. I need to start with that. What? One player in double figures, 37 points, 29% from the field? You're a Big East team. No bigger story than Jim Calhoun being slapped on the wrist, slapped on some part of his body, and we're going to get much into that. First, let's preface it by always clarifying. When we talk about college basketball and people think we don't know what we're talking about, they are wrong. In this particular case, where there was a former student manager turned agent turned impropriety turned people, recruits getting basically money and free benefits and getting called too much. You and I know a hell of a lot about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I was personally involved in a different time with a lot of this stuff. There's no such thing as texting yet, but the fact remains that we were both have been involved in college basketball for some period of time and have intimate knowledge of this.
You were a manager, mm-hmm. and my phone had been stolen by coaches to call kids illegally. I'm not saying the kid nor the coach, but that has happened to me before on the floor of Madison Square Garden of all places. So we have both seen and will not share some of the things that I'm sure would get people in caught in violations. And that's not fair because media, blah, blah, blah. But that being said, let's talk about Jim Calhoun. The story broke last year, I believe in March. Yahoo broke the story. Adrian Wojnarowski and Dan Wetzel broke this completely wide open. And finally, however, was it 2 years ago? 2009? Yeah, 2 years ago. And it took almost two full years for the NCAA to come down and basically do nothing. Calhoun gets a 3-game suspension. Two of his assistants are, you know, persona non grata at the school, and one of the guys is getting what's the term that I'm looking for here? Can you help me out on this one?
Is it disassociated? Which, I don't know which guy, disassociated or the, are we talking about an employer or the booster?
Basically, no, the employee. There's basically a line in here, and I apologize for not having it in front of me, where he, in order for him to have a job in college basketball again, the NCAA has to say, okay. And I'm looking for the wording. I'll find it at some point. But it all centers around, and I'm sure everyone's seen this part, it all centers around the fact that UConn really, really wanted a kid, Nate Miles, who turned out to be sort of a head case and never played for them and left and not as good as everyone thought. But Calhoun thought he was. And the story sort of changed throughout the times, I guess, because when you're a head coach of a basketball team, you're in charge of everything. But Jim Calhoun told the NCAA when he got caught or when Yahoo, you know, broke this story, I didn't know everything. I didn't know that they were doing this, and when I found out that they were doing some stuff, I told him, whoa, we have to play by the rules. Totally threw his assistants under the bus. Now, this part came out before, but the part that came out yesterday, which everyone's reacting to, is the fact that Calhoun himself got a 3-game Big East suspension, which I guess is better than a 3-game suspension because it's in conference, next year. So it doesn't impact this season, even though the ruling came down yesterday. It impacts the first 3 games of the Big East season next year. So before we get to all the reaction of all the people out there who cover this sport every day, what's your thought on that as someone who lived college basketball for, you know, a dozen years?
The part of the story I struggle with is it's the you were dumb enough to get caught part. Because I'm not saying other programs do it to this extent, and I'm sure other programs do things that are far worse than this. But these guys got caught. So they're going to be held up as the example of, okay, and we're talking about a Hall of Fame coach. We're talking about a legendary program. We're talking about, you know, this something that means so much to us, you know, singularly to a state. that UConn basketball is bigger than life. But so I'd like to stand on the mountaintop and say, punish them, throw them down the well, you know, take everything away, you know, throw them in handcuffs, throw away the key. But I had this feeling underneath it all that, honestly, they're just ones that got caught. Everyone else does stuff like this. How bad are they compared to other people? I mean, we just saw Bruce Pearl report himself get nailed and get one of these conference suspensions even this year. Of course, that happened a lot more quickly.
Right. He reported himself because he got caught, right, too. I mean, he said no, and they, oh, well, yeah, all right, fine.
Yeah, so it's happening elsewhere. So I think it's – I don't – you know, personally, I've never been a fan of UConn, but that has nothing to do with this. I think that they deserve to be punished. I don't know. If you read – everyone hears the three-game suspension, but if you read through the nitty-gritty of it, losing a scholarship, they've had
already self-imposed that, though. I mean, they lost –
No, I know. I'm just saying losing a number of hours. There are things that will hinder them slightly going forward. So it wasn't just a suspension for the coach. There was hours taken away for recruiting, the number of people who can actually make phone calls, stuff like that. But like I said, I think personally it probably should have been a worse penalty. But I think they're being hypocritical when they penalize someone so harshly, knowing what else is going on out there. I guess that's what it
is. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. Because, well, first of all, let me clean up a little bit about where I was tripping over looking for, because we have about 17 windows open right now. Bo Archibald received a 2-year show cause penalty, and that's the term I was looking for, show cause. And what that basically means is if you get hired by someone, we need to approve it first, which is, in theory, saying you're never going to get hired. Because if a school really wants to hire him, they're going to have the spotlight on them every second of every day. And why would you necessarily – it's almost like he's on parole. Why would you do that? Why would you bring suspicion onto your own program? I mean, somebody might hire him, obviously, if he got to the level of UConn. But going back to your point right there, so the way you're making it sound is that you feel that this was a pretty steep penalty, that the headline is 3 games, but you feel that the extra stuff, the limiting the phone calls and obviously the scholarship loss, is significant enough for this because everyone else is doing it.
No, it's not that.
That's what it sounded like.
Okay, no, what I'm saying is it's people who will classify this as nothing but a slap on the wrist because of a 3-game suspension for the coach need to see the other stuff that happened, which is a more significant penalty. But like I said, I don't think it's enough but for what was done. But because what is done so often in so many places, I think it's hard for them to set a precedent where if they throw the book at UConn, then the next program that pops up, that they're going to feel compelled to do the same thing to them. And the NCAA doesn't want to do that to their significant programs.
Okay, that's fair. And I agree with that. That UConn is a perennial tournament team, a Final Four potential every year, and especially this year. And why would you throw them under a bus when they help your sport grow? I don't want to get too deep into this, but I feel the need to compare it to steroids in baseball, because with steroids in baseball, I am under the assumption that everyone's on something, and I've said this all along, and they're all cheaters. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean don't police it. I think you need to come up with a clear and definitive line. To the NCAA's credit with college basketball, and we crush the NCAA all the time, but to their credit, there are definitive lines. They take tests every year. There is no gray area of what is and is not a violation, and these were significant violations. Significant violations, which is why I think that this is a complete slap on the wrist. I'm not saying – it's hard for me to say it should be done this year. And I know Doug Gottlieb and other people were saying it should be done this year. It's hard for me to say that because I think that the timing of the investigation concluding is completely arbitrary. Had somebody put in more into evidence, it could have taken another 2 months. And what are you going to do, suspend him in the middle of the NCAA tournament? Or no, another month. So I think I think it's fine to do it next season. But I think you take away his postseason. It's not fair to the kids on the team currently, especially if they are of good standing in school and of good standing athletically. But I think you take away his postseason, whether it be the Big East, or you say to the Big East, look, you take away the Big East tournament, we're taking away any postseason, NIT, NCAA, whatever the other thing is that you pay to get into. I think that would have been more fair, because then it could have been a 1-game suspension if they get knocked out in the first round, or a 6-game suspension. And I think that's fair. And then let the Big East do what the SEC did to Bruce Pearl and decide we're going to suspend you for the first 3 games of the conference. I think the NCAA totally let the Big East off the hook and totally let Calhoun off the hook.
I don't disagree with that. But I think that what you came up with is creative and probably fair and makes sense. But as we've seen throughout time, NCAA punishments rarely make sense.
Right.
They, you know, they don't follow logic. They don't look, you know, you don't think, okay, well, you did something very bad based on the rules. They don't all play by the same rules. And that's why you're talking about a major program is not going to get as punished because they, you know, they can't afford to alienate them. They can't afford to not have them playing well. Now, great. There's lots of great programs. There's lots of great programs within their own conference, but they sort of, the UConn has that mystique. It has the capital in that state. It needs to keep going. So what they do is they provide, you know, at a suspension that, you know, and like I said, this is the actual suspension part, I think is weak. I think three games in conference is no big deal. Because you see what happens, you know, in the conference schedule, teams knock each other off left and right. And despite what Boeheim says, I think they are battle testing themselves for
That's bullshit
for the NCAA's. But the NCAA has shown a pattern of not having the stones to really, you know, put that punishment out there. And you know, and we will go through what some of the pundits have said, and a lot of people say, "Well, what the main punishment here is you're tarnishing a Hall of Famer's."
Oh, yeah, don't jump on that because I want to crush some people specifically. No, it's fine. Your point is germane, and I want to get to it and accredit it to the proper people because that is ludicrous. But let's start with some other people. Jeff Goodman from Fox Sports. He led his reaction, and this is where we're going to get into the reaction to the reaction. No postseason ban. That's honestly all that matters. Sure, UConn coach and Hall of Famer Jim Calhoun, he of two national championships, took a whack from the NCAA when the organization finally rendered its decision Tuesday afternoon after a nearly two-year investigation. Maybe a light slap on the wrist is a more appropriate term. So he is of the, unless you're going to, sort of how I feel, unless you're going to ban him from postseason, it's nothing. It means nothing. You could ban him for the entire regular season. Almost, and it doesn't mean anything because on talent they'll probably be a Big East tournament team, and then rather an NCAA tournament team out of the Big East. For those people, by the way, before we get to some of the more some more comments, for those people who think that they should have a TV ban, it's impossible. It's not fair to the other schools they play. So that's like a 1970s logic. And people thought about that with USC. You know, when they went on probation, they should be banned from television because television is what helps recruiting the most. You see them on TV. You can't ban them from that. I brought up Rutgers at the beginning of this. If Rutgers gets three games on national TV and one of them happens to be against UConn, you're going to take that away from Rutgers? How would you do that? How's that fair?
No, it's not. And that's a good point in that, you know, the whole television aspect of it is big today. Therefore, you think of it as, oh, we'll take them off of TV. But going back for one second to the idea of the postseason ban, and I think that's the whole, as I said before, and I'll sort of keep harping on it, that's the kind of stuff that will destroy a program. Because if you're a kid who's deciding between, you know, UConn and Louisville and Villanova, and you know that, well, if I go to UConn, I'm not going to get in the postseason for 2 years. I'm not going there. So therefore, you basically get resetting that program. You're basically crushing that program by making it so kids – it's not attractive for kids to even go there. And they just don't want to do that. And that's the bottom line. They don't want to take UConn out of the mix. If they were flat out paying kids – I mean, if you look at the SMU documentary that was on this year, I mean, they were engaged in the worst practices ever seen in the history of the NCAA. And it still took them time to figure that out. And they still warned him at times and said, you know, hey, knock this off or we'll come after you. And they said, you won't get us. It took that much to actually put on what's, you know, now known as a death sentence. They're not going to do that anymore unless you're absolutely positively just spitting in the NCAA's eye.
It almost reads like that, though, Nick. This almost reads like they are actually paying this kid to come to UConn. But anyway, let's keep on. Pat Forty, who I love and respect at ESPN, on Tuesday, the NCAA Committee of Infractions knocked a chunk out of the cult of the head coach by suspending Connecticut's Jim Calhoun for three Big East games next basketball season. As penalties go, it's not a haymaker, especially when you consider what transpired at UConn in its recruitment and enrollment of former player Nate Miles. But the three-game penalty is far more than a slap on the wrist. Putting Calhoun's Hall of Fame behind on the couch for 1/6 of conference play is tangible proof that the age-old way of doing business in college sports, protect the head coach at all costs, is no longer acceptable. So Forty took it as a macro sense that the NCAA is sending a message to all of their coaches that we will not tolerate head coaches throwing their assistants under the bus and then not getting anything for it. That while this wasn't a huge sentence, and he says more than a slap on the wrist, Goodman said a slight slap on the wrist, which you'll see throughout the rest of the things we found. His point is more, this sends a message to everyone else. And I think it sends a message to everyone else too, but the message isn't very strong.
In its premise, I kind of see what Forty's trying to say. I think combined with the Bruce Pearl thing is that this is the second time we've seen a high-profile coach suspended for – now, granted, that was completely his actions. It wasn't what, you know, what Forty's talking about here. And what you were saying is, you know, the assistants, you're paying for – you know, you can't throw them under the bus. But the idea that they've suspended two coaches in the last 6 months, they're trying to say, look, we will do this. Don't test us. But – I think it is so light that it's hard to take seriously. And if you were a coach thinking, all right, you know, if it takes this much to get a kid here and I'll get three games, well, so be it. We'll figure this out.
Yeah, it's nothing. I mean, it's nothing. They don't even think about the three games. They say, oh, sucker, got caught. I mean, that's all they're thinking right now. I mean, Pearls is eight games. That's a big deal. And especially a team that look, I mean, they've done well. They've gone very deep into the tournament. But there have also been years where they're a bubble team. If you're a bubble team and you lose your head coach for eight games in conference, that's going to crush you in the SEC. It's probably not going to crush UConn, but it would crush Tennessee. So that's a big deal, I think. And that was, you know, the SEC coming down. Let's move on. ESPN had another story, Dana O'Neill. And by the way, I was wondering why Andy Katz hadn't written about this, but then they did a video with Eamon Brennan was on there, Gottlieb was on there, Lenardi, who didn't say anything, Dino Gaudio, who I that's inexplicable to me, but and Andy Katz. So they all went back and forth on that, and maybe we'll link to that video because they all sort of said the same things that everyone else is saying. Some people think it's good, some people think it's not enough, and it's not. But Dana O'Neill had you sort of teased it earlier. By slinging him out for penalty, suspending Calhoun for the first three games of next year's Big East season because of recruiting violation, the Committee on Infractions has sent a clear and concise message to the coach. You are culpable in this. On the surface, it might not seem like much. Calhoun will only miss 1/6 of the 18-game marathon that is the Big East slate. He has missed games before, more than three, in fact, with various health concerns. That was, if not of his choosing, at least of his own making. But this is a benching of a man whose reputation means a great deal to him. And then Dana O'Neill continues to talk about Calhoun's legacy and how this, while not a stiff penalty, has a resounding stain on his legacy. And we talk about this going back to the steroids point with a Mark McGwire. Mark McGwire may never get into the Hall of Fame. He was not officially suspended for steroids, but then since he admitted it and everything afterwards, Rafael Palmeiro was caught, got a small suspension or whatever in the grand scheme of his career, and won't get into the Hall of Fame. This is a legacy stain for Calhoun, but Calhoun's already in the Hall of Fame. So how much of a stain on his legacy can this really be?
Well, it'll be no stain on his legacy. That's the thing, because when people think Jim Calhoun, they'll think, you know, national titles. They'll think Final Four appearances. They'll look at that he's a member of the Hall of Fame.
Like Ray Allen and Rip Hamilton. And
yeah, and you know what? And he got suspended for three games one time for making too many texts and too many phone calls. I mean, if they wanted to make a statement, it would be like, you're suspended for the 2011 or 2012 season. That people would remember. They would say, oh, my God, this guy was a Hall of Fame coach, but they bounced him for an entire season and told him to stay away. That was amazing. This three games, nothing. No one will ever remember it.
Right. Gary Parrish echoed that. Basically the same thing that O'Neill said, but said it the other way. I mean, he said, you see why this is crazy. Don't you? Three games. Calhoun has missed more than that in recent years for exhaustion. You know, Calhoun might just take three games off on his own. This might be a good thing for him with his health concerns.
No, that is one of the first things you think of is a guy, and I should have said that too. The other thing you may think of in his career is, wow, you know, this is a guy who did have some health problems, had to sit out some games, endured, came back, but was out for time. And that was one of the first things I thought of was, okay, this is nothing new for this guy to miss games, and it hasn't necessarily, you know, hurt the team in the long run. You know, the teams he missed were not his best teams. Trust me. You know, if he was one of these national championship teams, he wouldn't have been missing that time. So the times he missed, yes, it probably hurt the team slightly, but it wasn't a death knell to their season.
No, and by the way, Parrish brings up what you brought up earlier in this paragraph. Calhoun ran a program featuring a coaching staff that made thousands of impermissible calls and text messages and used an agent booster to secure the enrollment of a prospect. He got caught, and the penalty basically is that he'll be forced to miss three games next season, just like Kansas State guard Jacob Pullen was forced to miss three games this season for accepting less than $300 in discounted clothing. I mean, that's a really good way of showing, you know, the Kansas State thing had nothing to do with UConn, but it is a good way of showing the NCAA threw a blanket of three games over two completely different things. And to your point of, it's okay to suspend one kid for 3 games for doing basically nothing, and then you're going to suspend Calhoun because you don't want to piss off one of your marquee programs.
Yeah, I mean, that is what this keeps coming back to, is the name on the front of the jersey. If this is, you know, right now we're dealing with around here, and it's not even close to the level of, but at Holy Family University, there was a coach who was, you know, put his hands on a kid and basically knocked him over, and there's a video of it. It's been making the rounds. And if the NCAA got involved in a situation like that, I imagine they would just say, well, we got to get rid of this guy because it's a nothing, nobody program no one's ever heard of, Division II, whatever it is. But when you're talking about UConn, you're talking about one of the giants of the game, and he, the coach who is a giant of the game, they just don't
physically,
have the
guts by the way,
to,
too.
Yeah, no, I know.
Enormous man.
Yeah, and they just don't have the guts to do anything about it. And the first time they do it, you know, the next time they do it, it'll be the first time they do it with a big time coach.
The interesting thing for me, covering, you know, looking for everyone's opinions and whatnot, and I'm sure, look, I apologize, I'm sure I'm missing stuff, and I'm missing a ton of the bloggers, and I value their opinions too. It's just, I wanted to get more of a national sense from the national college basketball writing voices on this, so that it was sort of on purpose. I'm not excluding anyone, although I did go to Rush the Court today and didn't see much on it. And by the way, did go to NBCSports.com, and I know they have their blog network, and I didn't have a chance to look. The front page of NBCSports.com did not have it in their rotator, and when you clicked on it on the right side, it was a 4-paragraph AP story. I mean, I know Yahoo broke this open, you know, a couple of years ago, but man alive, I thought this was a bigger – we're spending a whole show on this. I thought this was a bigger deal than a 4-paragraph AP story. I'm surprised that NBC Sports had basically nothing, at least when I looked this morning. Maybe they had more yesterday afternoon. And then moved it around somewhere. But Yahoo,
at the same time, maybe that shows their opinion of the penalty. Maybe they're saying, well, geez, why should we even bother with this? This penalty wasn't that big a deal. 3 games for the guy who did this. And they're just saying, let's devote our resources elsewhere. Because frankly, we don't see it's worth the time when we look at it, because it didn't break any new ground. It wasn't revolutionary. It was what it was.
And that's fair. I also think, yeah, I mean, I think there's more of a focus on other sports at NBC right now. I mean, so you're right. I mean, I'm not ripping them for not covering it. I'm pointing out the fact that I did go there to get some sort of reaction and I couldn't find much. And maybe it was my poor searching, but I do want to sort of end on the reaction to the reaction with Yahoo. And I couldn't find Wetzel or Wojnarowski. I'm sure they'll have comments on this at some point. I'm sure they've talked on radio and done a bunch of stuff yesterday. And on Twitter and whatnot. So I wanted to keep it to actual columns. And what I found today, written, I believe, yesterday, was Les Carpenter and Jeff Eisenberg, who obviously does it on the blog platform. And they had different reactions and responses to this, both at Yahoo. So it's interesting because Yahoo was the one that started this. So to get Yahoo's opinion, even their opinion isn't necessarily the same. Here's Carpenter's quotes. So while it was easy to assume Calhoun got off light when the NCAA didn't put a postseason ban on his team Tuesday, the punishment that did come was actually far worse for the reputation he fought bitterly to guard. This is sort of like Dana O'Neill. By finding Calhoun failed to create an atmosphere of compliance, the NCAA's Committee on Infractions was essentially saying he was no better than the crooks, cheaters, and scoundrels against whom he coached for nearly 40 years. Forever now, the Calhoun name will include a 3-game conference suspension for recruiting violations, and that he can never erase. Totally overstated. I mean, just unbelievably, nobody cares. Calhoun probably doesn't even care about this. And I know that his point, O'Neill's point, was this guy is such an egomaniac, and he cares so much about his legacy that this will be worse for him than a 15-game suspension would be. And to that, I want to say the NCAA is doing the equivalent of giving a 2-year jail term to a hitman who rolled over on the person who paid for the hit, yet going up to the person who paid for the hit and putting it in the front page of the newspaper and saying, your legacy will be tainted, sir. Go spend a weekend in prison or in jail, not even in prison. And that being enough to taint the legacy of like a big CEO who had someone killed. No, the person should still go to jail for the same amount of time.
Yeah, I might go with insider trading over hitman or something of that nature because
right,
I think murder.
Right,
I would say, yeah, to just say like, yeah, no, but it's like when these banking scandals right now, it would be like
better analogy.
Taking you know the CEO of Goldman Sachs and just being like basically like, all right, well, we got all the underlings, but you know your reputation is stained. Like, yeah, and I'm sitting here swimming around in my money, still able to go around and do what I need to, you know, and still participate in financing operations and making more money. But yeah, you let me sit around for a little while and not be able to do that. Oh, well. I mean, that, you know.
It's like this. Shame. Shame on you, Mr. Madoff, for stealing all of that money. Shame to you. You're free to go.
Yeah. And you know, listen, I'm sure in his mind, his reputation may be slightly damaged. But I'm sitting here as a person who has, like I said, I've never been a UConn fan. I've never been a Calhoun fan. And maybe it's because I don't think much of him now. But I'm not sitting here going, aha, they got him. They finally got that. No, I'm just like, yeah, you know, whatever. It's not going to hurt him in the least bit. You know, he still has his rings, and that's the main thing for these guys. And he is not told you may not be with the program. He can still recruit people. He can still coach the team. He's still in the Big East, and he's still the biggest deal in Connecticut.
Right, and here's Eisenberg, by the way, Yahoo. So this is the opposite of what Les Carpenter said about his reputation being sullied. Even though the NCAA ruled in May that UConn committed 8 major violations in the 2006 recruitment of forward Nate Miles, the penalty the Huskies received was little more than a slap on the wrist. UConn wasn't banned from the postseason, nor will the team be without head coach Jim Calhoun for long. Calhoun will only have to sit out 3 conference games the next season and not make phone calls to recruits for a period of 6 months, despite being cited for, quote, failure to promote an atmosphere of compliance within the program. That's not so much a reaction. He's just laying out the facts. But in doing so, I think that says a lot. 6 months without making phone calls. By the way, he can receive phone calls. He can talk to the kids. They just have to call him. Stain on your reputation. Shame to you. It's sort of comical. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying you ban the guy for life. He's old. Maybe he would just retire if you ban him for a season. I'm not saying that this deserves that. But man alive, it deserved more than 3 games for this guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bottom line. Again, I think that the recruiting stuff could hinder them somewhat. That is the stuff that's sort of underneath it all that people aren't going to read. They're just going to read the suspension part. But what would have hindered them more was it's like, oh, well, you can come to UConn. I can't coach you for half of the season, but you should come here. Well, then that might have had a guy give some pause and go, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I could go somewhere else. No, it's 3 games. It's not really going to hurt their reputation as far as recruits saying, I'd like to go to this major power program. It wasn't enough, and it's not surprising. That's the bottom line.
You have anything else today?
Well, I thought we were going to analyze the big Lights El Diablo fight from last night.
Yeah, spoiler alert. A little disappointing. You know, you spend all that money for a pay-per-view. You got like a 1+ rounds. I mean, come on. Give us a fight, guys.
I mean, one plus indeed. And it was a lot of dirty hitting. So we don't really know what would have happened had that fight continued any longer than just shortly into the second round. But, you know, that's boxing for you.
But I'm very excited for the Lights Leary Death Row Reynolds rematch. It's been 5 years since those guys fought. I mean, 5 years is a long time. And I know that the division has not been great. And obviously it hasn't been great because Leary can fight one time and then get a title shot again. Champion or not in the past. But I don't know. I'm pretty excited about it.
Meanwhile, everyone is going, am I in the Twilight Zone? What are these two idiots talking about?
What are we talking about? No, we're talking about boxing. Boxing is back on FX.
Yes.
Boxing is back, folks.
No, it is, folks. If you're not watching Lights Out, it's a really good show. And I think it's probably available at this point on demand. Most of the I think all the episodes are probably sitting on there.
You can go on
rainy,
Hulu.
Rainy time this weekend.
You can go on Hulu.
I always forget that method as well. But no, it's the rare good sports program. We've just lost one with Friday Night Lights, and this isn't on that level, but it's a good representation of a sports program.
Interesting. One quick note. Mike Freeman brought up something, I think when the season started, of, oh, great, a movie came out about a white boxer and a TV show came out about a white boxer. Is there ever going to be – there's even been white women's boxers who had movies about them. Is there ever going to be a show or movie about a black boxer? Has there ever been?
About the hurricane where he was in jail.
Right, yeah. Oh, the guy was in jail. I mean, it's sort of unbelievable. Look, I mean, the guy's from New Jersey in this show, and you know, so for me, it's like The Sopranos with a little less corruption and a little bit more. You want to root for the guy. I mean, it's sort of that style of show. But man alive, Freeman's right. Get a story about a black guy.
Diggstown. There's Louis Gossett Jr.
Come on.
I know. No, I mean, you're right. I'm just...
They run the sport for the last 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, except for like 3 famous white dudes. But every show is about a white guy boxing. Yeah. And you, Robert De Niro. Feel it on the DLPodcast.com. Presscoverage.us. Was that your anything else?
Yes, it was.
Talk to everybody tomorrow.